We're very fortunate that NJPN has made a wonderful new friend over this last year through the course of planning for this conference, a virtual friend until this morning, and that is Brian. And it's lovely to see a friend in person, although Zoom is fantastic, but the real thing is even better. So we're very fortunate that Brian O'Toole is to open our conference this evening by speaking about the Sustainable Development Goals. And you'll see some information, very useful information, that Ellen has helped us put together to put in your conference packs. And what he says, Brian at one point said, we might just be the first generation to end poverty, and we might be the last generation with the chance to save our planet for future generations. And that's what we're about. Brian is director of the Presentation Justice Desk, working out of the Marino Institute of Education in Dublin, a collaborative mission in justice that involves the English, Northeast and Southwest presentation provinces, sharing and learning from the work and experience of presentation people in their own provinces. Brian is also chair of the institute that has a link to the United Nations and has a voice at the United Nations. So on behalf of everybody here, a huge warm welcome to our new friend and fantastic collaborator, Brian. He's going to brilliantly manage his own session, which is even better. So welcome, Brian, and over to you.
I might now run for the door that Anne picked out earlier on as well. But just to say, firstly, just to thank all of you and to thank Anne for the kindness of the welcome and the committee and yourselves as guests and participants. And I know on a Friday evening, so many of you have travelled from so many different places, from far afield, from near, all over, just to be here this weekend to try and learn a little bit more, to hear a little bit more, to find out what next, what can we do next. We're hoping that you will engage with us in as many different ways as you can this particular weekend. We hope that you'll be disturbed by what you hear. We also hope too that you'll be energised by what you hear and enthused and motivated and informed in new ways maybe that might prompt you to change or prompt you to help others to change, to prompt a greater engagement and perhaps following on from that a little bit of action. So as Anne said a little bit earlier, the plan really this evening is to set the tone for the weekend in such a way that what you hear tomorrow at the workshops is built upon what you hear this evening, so that as we head towards Sunday, we can arrive at commitments or common actions or common statements around what next for all of us as we leave the conference. I would like to congratulate the committee firstly on the really suitable title for the conference, Sustainability, Survival or Shutdown. Me, I'm a survivalist. That would be where I'd stand. And coming at such a pivotal time, halfway between 2015 and 2030, the Agenda 2030, which is the Sustainable Development Goals, and you can see them on all around the walls, that plan began its time in 2015, but right now in 2023, we are halfway between the start and the end of the plan. So the question really is, are we halfway there? Have we achieved? Are we well on the way? And that's a question really, but we will come back to that. There are definitely some hard decisions that need to be made. Decisions that will ask us to do more, to connect in better ways. They will invite us to query our relationships, prompting perhaps a new engagement. They will demand a new honesty and a definite, defined and renewed integrity. And some of these qualities, you might say, are in short supply or are in shortening supply. In Laudato Si, Pope Francis asks, what kind of world do we want to leave those who come after us, to the children who are now growing up? This is the question that is at the heart of Laudato Si. For me, this is the ray of hope that flows through this encyclical. Humanity still has the ability to work together in building our common home. Men and women are still capable of intervening positively. We are told in Laudato Si that all is not lost, Human beings, while being capable of things that are not so good, are also capable of rising above themselves and choosing again what is good and in making a new start. And this is the thread of hope that I hope will be very much in evidence throughout the conference of this particular weekend. If you go down to the next slide, you'll see the Sustainable Development Goals, also known as the Global Goals, Agenda 2030. They had their origin in what was called the Brundtland Report, which is our common future. And we kind of heard that kind of phrase again and again. They were adopted by the United Nations in 2015 as a universal call to action. And that's important, the word universal. To end poverty, protect the planet, and ensure that by 2030, all people enjoy peace and prosperity. When the goals were being negotiated, we were told that there was a small group given a piece of work to do. Can you do something better than the Millennium Goals? Because that was the start of it. So from 2000 to 2015, we had the Millennium Goals, 8 goals with a super purpose, make things better for the nations that don't have things going too well. So this new plan, the Sustainable Development Goals, was universal. It wasn't just for the poor. This was for everybody. It was for everybody, for me, for Anne, for all of you, for everybody, people you haven't met, people who haven't even been born yet. And that's important also. The Sustainable Development Goals are for everybody. But we were told at the time that word was going round the UN that there is some plan for the future that is better than the Millennium Goals. And bit by bit, countries began to think, oh, we can't be left out of that. We can't be left out of that. And people began to stream into the room to be told, well, how do we get involved? What do we have to do? And bit by bit, countries started to sign up. And that's when the difficulties happened. They were saying, oh, that's too hard of an agenda. Can you soften it this side and soften it? So some of the criticisms are there that maybe it's not as robust as it might be. But the reason it's not so robust is we managed to get everyone into the room. And that's the real thing. For the first time ever, 193 nations came together and said, actually, we can sign up to this. But one of the messages, or the key messages, was leave no one behind. Leave nobody outside the door. Keep talking to them. Bring them in if you possibly can. Underpinning these goals was the call to measure what matters. Because, as you know, if it's not measured, it doesn't matter. And what gets measured gets better. They're built on the success of the Millennium Goals. There are 17 goals. You can see them around the room. It looks like there's a space for an extra one. It almost looks like there should be an 18th goal. And we have a suggestion about that too. There were targets, there were negotiations to try and bring everybody on board. But to achieve the goals fully, if we were to achieve the goals fully, it would happen by extension that 90% of human rights would be realised. So that is the gift of achieving the goals. It would happen that that is the case because they are built on the human rights and they are framed from a human rights framework or from a human rights based approach. They put the person at the centre. This was new. This was brand new. Every person. Many of you attending the conference this evening might well get the sense that the world is maybe nearly beyond repair. Every report, every speech begins with a kind of a list or a recitation of the tragedies and the ills befitting humanity, the polycrisis as it has become known. But I also wonder whether, when everyone is quite aware of the precipice on which we stand, it might be helpful to start from a different place. Just for a single moment, if you just take a minute to try and think, what lifted your heart during the week? Something that happened, something you heard, someone you saw, some news you heard. What lifted your heart? Now, I'm only giving you that chance to think because I'm going to start asking you the questions now. And I'll be looking for one or two people who might share one of those things with us that maybe... what it was that lifted your heart. Actually, something I saw outside my window, I saw a pile of little rabbits right outside the window. For a second, that really lifted my heart. Literally, as I kind of came into the room, they were literally just at eye level, practically looking in at me. Something that simple. Would anybody like to share on anything that lifted their heart during the last week? We have somebody here? We have microphones. Oh, I thought you only giving. I thought the man was going to speak. But are you sure you don't want to speak now? It's free.
Shopping down here.
Shopping down here, is that it? Good man. Okay, there's something that lifted that man's heart. Shopping. Shopping lifts lots of hearts. Yes, go ahead, please.
It was a young man who's in serious trouble. He was round at my house writing his CV. And it just so happened another woman arrived who needed help. That young man helped
her down the last two stairs of my house. Without question, he just got up, he saw need, and in that moment I knew he would break through.
Okay, thank you for that. Yeah. Even hearing it lifts the heart, lifts mine, and it's your story. Anybody else? We have another lady over here. Don't worry, we'll get around to everybody. Seeing a beautiful hollyhock growing tall. Okay, thank you, Trace. That's lovely.
My 10-year-old granddaughter brought her books home yesterday, end of school year, and she'd been doing at school something with on fair trade and what fair trade was and the fair trade mark. And it, you know, thinking back to the days when the mark was new and we were working on it and all that, to think that it was there in school was good.
10 out of 10. It lifted your heart. With another gentleman here. Oh, now the hands are going up.
Hi, hello everybody. So basically I have a mum who's bedbound. She's fed with a pipe. She goes for dialysis 3 days a week. She has vascular dementia, a care package. And just to see her smile, that really lifts my heart. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. It's actually lifted our heart, you telling us, I think. Go ahead, of course you can speak.
Yes. I was actually reading, I think it was today, in the Independent Catholic News, the report of a group of sixth formers from Hallam Diocese who went to Calais, and that report from a young person encouraging us all to get involved, and what they experienced lifted my heart.
Thank you for that. There are so many stories we have. Susan over there.
I just received a text just before I came in here from a young trainee nurse who has spent the last 3 weeks in Zambia at our orphanage, Cheshire Home, saying that she has had a most wonderful experience.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else like to have a go? We have a couple more people. We'll just take 40 more and then we'll start. I know. Go ahead, this gentleman at the back.
I woke up this morning in the constituency of Selby and Ainsty.
And that lifted your heart?
That in itself lifted my heart. I won't bring party politics in, but let's just say the election of a young man passionate about things that I think deeply matter, the newest, youngest member of parliament, and a big change in our area, I feel very hopeful.
Okay, thank you for that. Yeah, okay. There's a gentleman here.
Yeah. He stole my thunder.
He stole your thunder.
Okay. Local elections.
The local election result lifted your heart. Okay.
They sure did.
Okay, well, there's a couple of hearts, it sounds like, that has been lifted by the local elections. Okay, we'll come back. We have another question in a couple of minutes. But just to say, the point I'm trying to make is that what if we came at the subject of trying to make a difference or make a change from the point of view of being a little bit more hopeful? People began to tell stories of what happened and things that they noticed and things that lifted their heart. But what was very noticeable around the room was that when one person told a story, somebody else thinking, oh my God, isn't that great? Their heart was lifted by what they heard. So we were together. So there was a kind of a mutual hope. And that's just when it concerns ourselves. And I could hear in the stories that there were stories about older people and younger people, that there were stories about people who are here, people who aren't here, people that you knew and people that you didn't know. There was a whole sense of inclusion and leaving no one behind. So what if I was to try and say, take that just a step further? If I was to say, if I asked you to share on something from the global landscape that gives you hope. Now, it doesn't have to be in the last week, but just, is there anything in the global landscape that gives you hope? And some of it we might have already heard, but there might be other things too. There's a prize after death. Isn't there? No, there's none. Anybody have anything they might... Oh, we have somebody here. Thank you for that. Leaving me standing here, I'd look like I don't know what. But
I'd just like to share that I use LinkedIn quite a lot. And I follow a Spanish guy who's called Javier. And he has a series of videos called Hope. And so it's really uplifting to see that there is this movement of not just young people, but an international movement of people who are really engaged in fighting for justice and peace globally.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Anybody else have news that they think might... We have somebody here and we have somebody here. Thank you.
So yesterday I went to my daughter's graduation, a day that 8 years ago I couldn't have foreseen, but what was really uplifting about it was that two-thirds of the people came from other parts of the world and two-thirds of them were women. And okay. I would say about a quarter of them were wearing hijabs.
That is very uplifting, I have to say. Like, actually, even hearing what you're saying, it's like it's a whole learning experience. Was there somebody here? There was somebody here. Thank you for that.
I heard that in Bristol there is a... an organisation that is doing large-scale groundwater heat pumps in several areas in Bristol with the potential of advancing on that, and I had no idea that it was already happening.
Thank you. Okay, we have a gentleman here, and then maybe after that I'll press on.
Just I've been on the news about the barge arriving in Portland Harbour. But probably a better news is that there's not going to be a barge arriving in the port of Tyne. There is a local campaign called Asylum Matters, and obviously one of the areas that was possibly targeted to have a similar type of, you know, old cruise ship or barge was the River Tyne. And there has been a letter-writing campaign, local politicians have been written to, and actually that the port of Tyne have now announced... they sent the letter out saying that they don't want a barge in our river. And that's a big thing, because obviously if you can't get the barge in the river, well, obviously you don't have the place to detain asylum seekers there. So that's a bit of good news in terms of the barge.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much. And thanks to everybody who shared, whether it was something that lifted your heart or whether it was something that you noticed on the global landscape that brought you some hope. And really the point of what I'm trying to say is that in that short time, we're able to share mutual victories, shall we say, that prompted suggestions of how these might be repeated. I think these kinds of conversations could be helpful to anybody who's feeling the weight of the world on their shoulders. The question I'd ask is, like, could it be possible that a conversation about hope might indeed be a source of hope in and of itself? I think it is. I definitely think so. Remember, we moved from the Millennium Goals to the Sustainable Development Goals because the aims of the Millennium Goals were to reduce hunger by half, to reduce the amount of people in poverty by half. They were targets, and they were good targets, but the Sustainable Development Goals said, no, end poverty, no hunger, it's all in. That's the ambition. They were much more ambitious. No poverty, zero hunger, quality education for all. They were and are a descriptor of the future that we want. They represented unprecedented ambition, and this was the buy-in that people wanted. They call upon the power of science, and they put in place times every year at the United Nations where countries had to step up and say, this is what we're doing. Last week, 42 countries prepared over the last 2 years, and they stood in front of a committee of their peers and they said, this is how well we're doing or not doing on our SDGs. Ireland were there last week. They gave an honest account and they said, we're doing well on this one, this one, this one, but we're not doing so well on these. We know where we have work to do. But the big point of it is that it's not just about governments. It's about all of us. We all have a part to play in it. If you take a look at the goals on the screen there, 7 of them are dedicated to human vulnerability, ending poverty, food security, universal health, universal education, gender equality, access to water and sanitation, access to sustainable energy resources. 5 are dedicated to ecological vulnerability, sustainable cities, sustainable methods of production and consumption, tackling climate change, conservation of oceans and landmass ecosystems. The call to action of the SDG reads, we can be the first generation to succeed in ending poverty, but just as we might be the last generation to have the chance to save the planet. And really, that kind of puts a responsibility on us. So if we start from the place of hope, because I think it can help us in many circumstances. Like if you were an athlete, for example, an athlete doesn't go into a race thinking, I'll never win, I'm not going to win, I won't even get it finished. An athlete starts the race because he thinks or she thinks, I can win well. But the reality is only one or two win. If somebody's unwell, a patient is unwell, they are asked, look, don't look at, you know, think how you might feel if you were to think of what it would be like when you were well. Patients in rehabilitation are often asked to channel a can-do attitude. And this is not a soft science. It can have a measurable impact on outcomes. And in this way, this is how I choose to look at the SDGs. An agreed can-do plan for our world. If you have a look at the next slide, please. By taking a closer look at the SDGs, you can see a compass up on the board. And I don't know whether you can see all, but there are 4 points on the compass. One point representing or relating to well-being, another to society, another to economy, and another to our environment. But if you think of the SDGs, we can't have one without the other. They are all connected. You can't say, well, we've achieved one in England or in the United Kingdom, you know, no hunger. Well, we know that's not the truth for a start. But you can't say we have achieved one because they are all interlinked. And in actual fact, for us to say we have achieved them in the United Kingdom is not enough. Because if we agree to this idea that we're leaving no one behind, it means that we have a responsibility to the nation or the country that can't achieve them without our help. So we have a responsibility to them. So by agreeing to the SDGs, all countries are brought into the narrative that they need to be measured. And this might mean that we have to develop tools to measure so that we can compare them. So the countries can't claim, oh, well, we've achieved that and we've done this and we've done. We have to be able to compare and contrast countries with each other. Put up the next slide, please. Earlier, we listened to some of your hopeful interventions. And I think that these can build a shared sense of optimism among us all here in Swanwick. This can carry over as we begin to address a variety of problems. It can illustrate the deeper principle and one that is relevant to the multilateral system, namely that progress is achieved most sustainably by building on our strengths, not by criticising our weaknesses, which is sometimes a tendency we have. We can't draw on capacities we haven't yet developed. We can't deploy resources that don't yet exist. At the end of the day, we work with the tools we have, not the tools we lack. And this idea underpins much of a can-do attitude that the SDGs can inspire. The SDGs are universal. They apply to everyone in our world. What is key is that they are not achieved anywhere until they're achieved everywhere. But we know that they won't be achieved uniformly. And when we use the word sustainable, we are reminded that these goals are the UN's effort to end poverty while protecting the planet and allowing people to experience peace and well-being forever. The word forever is left out of a lot of these goals. To leave no one behind is another key underlying principle, and it's trotted out all the time. But we actually need to think about, what does it mean to leave no one behind? It actually means we must reach the person or the group furthest behind first. But maybe it also means we should ask ourselves, why are so many so far ahead? That might be the question that might inspire us to think about, how do we make sure to leave no one behind? We must make it possible to include the voice of those with a lived experience, to allow those furthest behind to be activists, to have a role in making things better for themselves, not about us, without us, as they say. When we hear the word participation is key to the success of the SDGs, that means then that we have a role. You, me, everybody has a role. So what do we do about it? We learn. The reality is only 1 in 4 people in the United Kingdom and in Western Europe will tell you, I know about the SDGs, I've heard of them. I know something about them, yeah. Their goals, I don't know what football match they're in, but their goals. People don't know a lot about them, and we're halfway through. They should know, people should know much more. To be a partner demands real engagement. It's not just about consulting us. It's about being at the table, being there, being part of the message, being part of the solution. If you move on to the next slide, it might be an easier way to explain it in one sense. There are 5 P's that are often used when discussing the Sustainable Development Goals. Putting people at the centre. Putting people at the centre of anything ensures that there is some element of adhering to basic human rights. Peace. Very little can be achieved without peace. And we all know that for a fact. Partnership. Partnership means everybody. Not just people who want to have a say. It's also people who don't have a say or can't have a say or are too busy trying to live that they can't get their piece heard or said. Prosperity. It's about prosperity for all in a way that is sustainable and not using up the planet's resources to the extent that we continue to do so. The last P we'll add in there is goal 18, which looks like it's missing on the page. We add in prayer as an 18th goal that might underpin, overarch, be every single goal in between them all around them, everywhere. It is definitely one of them. Pope Francis noticed and remarked that the SDGs looked really simple, and I suppose they were designed to look simple. They were designed to kind of give a clear message. But he has assured us that the solutions are actually really complex. And it's really only when we begin to figure out how do we try and achieve these goals that really becomes, that's the real meat of the work and that's the difficulty. The SDGs stress their globalism and their universality, but they are idealistic. They're a UN plan for how politics can best be guided for the next 15 years, taking into account people, planet, prosperity, partnership, peace. And we'll add the last one in prayer. If you go on to the next slide. 2015 was a seminal year for lots of different reasons, and we were only talking about this earlier on. In June of 2016, there was Laudato Si was published, the Pope's encyclical. His first encyclical to the whole world, not just to the people he looked after, to the whole world. September 25th, the Pope, with his book in his back pocket, turned up at the UN and launched the Sustainable Development Goals. That's not an accident. He was coming with his message. And then later on that year, we had the Paris Agreement. So if you like, all of those things were 3 very hopeful pieces of news that when put together became a very solid foundation on which we could perhaps build a better world. And it was a case that the SDGs, or the Sustainable Development Goals, they were built on a successful Millennium Development Goals. Now they didn't do everything they said they'd do, but they were so successful, really, people thought we need something to come after these. They were adopted by so many different countries. We have been promised a high-level political forum every year in order to examine how well we're doing it. Another of the principles underpinning the SDGs is that they can't be achieved in isolation. As we said earlier, they're all connected. And if you look at climate change, for example, it's number 13 on the goals, but it leaks into so many others of them in terms of poverty, in terms of homelessness, in terms of reasonable consumption. There are five distinct positives, I think, that can apply to the SDGs. Firstly, that they're ambitious. So I think that's a good thing. I think that's really hopeful. They're a collective agenda. So they're about me. I have a part. I want a part. Don't leave me out, whatever you do. They are universal. So they apply to everybody. So there's nobody can say they're not about me. They are a strong commitment to end poverty. And they have an overarching principle to reduce inequalities. And actually, after COVID, inequalities really have increased hugely. If the SDGs are the plan, then Laudato Si is the moral charter by which they can be implemented. And while the SDGs seek to repair the existing global economic model, significantly, Laudato Si calls for a correction of the economic model and for a more ethical responsibility on all levels. The SDGs envision a green economy, while Laudato Si calls for a cultural shift towards an eco-solidarity. If you move on to the next slide. The UK has been rather ambivalent, really, in its SDG promise. They started off fantastic. It was arms in the air and there was cheering and they were super. And they did a good job. They were part of the negotiating team that got the SDGs over the line, and they should be proud of that. With DFID, they had a super department who worked hard, plenty of experience, lots of expertise. They were involved in trying to roll out the SDGs as far as they could. But then DFID disappeared. And along with DFID disappearing, the SDG message was kind of disappeared as well. And we lost huge expertise. And despite a lot of complaint, a lot of effort, DFID is still hidden or mixed up somewhere else, which is a real shame. It was felt that the SDGs were a plan. In the UK at the start kind of felt that the SDGs were a plan for the poorer countries, but then they had to be told quickly, no, they're about you as well. You have to turn up. They were embarrassed almost into coming to the UN by a group of civil society like yourselves who said, we will produce a shadow report on how well we're doing the SDGs. And a report was produced. And you can see the traffic lights up there. You see they have the measuring up was the name of the report. And they said 57% of them were kind of okay. 24% were doing well. So one quarter of them, 15% were not doing well at all. So in other words, they were trying to show simply, this is how well we're doing in 2018. And once the government saw that this was the case, they were embarrassed into turning up at the UN next year under the guise of Rory Stewart. So if you just move on to the next slide there, you'll see Rory Stewart, a Conservative politician, was charged with presenting the UK's first and only voluntary national review. Many other countries have been up twice. And the first report is nearly always a baseline report. This is where we are. The second report, everybody needs to see improvement. So the Measuring Up 2 report has just been published. And it has shown things that aren't so good. So we're hoping now that the government next year will come back and that they will now present their second voluntary national review. The reason I put the picture of the hands down on the left-hand side, one of the things that they did very well was when they produced the voluntary national review, they asked the children of the UK to draw pictures of what they thought the SDGs were or what they were about. So it meant teaching them and instructing and learning and finding out. And the children's pictures were used throughout that document. The winning picture was the one that was put in the front cover. So we heard that in Ireland. We said, oh, that's great. We'll ask ours to do that. And ours have done the exact same this year. So there are some good things to learn. But there are good news too. The APPG, the All-Party Parliamentary Group, there is one dedicated to the Sustainable Development Goals with over 150 MPs as part of that particular group. And that is significant. Because they regularly talk, debate, discuss. And one of the things that they're looking for is, can we have all policy SDG-proofed? Can we have a budget SDG-proofed? Can we have everything that comes out of any of the government offices SDG-proofed? So when Rory Stewart attended the United Nations in 29, he was very honest. And he brought with him people who criticised him on the UN stage for not going far enough. And he could take that because the UK is a confident country. Some countries got up and lied and said, we are doing everything right, but we know they're not. But the UK gave a very honest report. One of the promises that they have made is that every person has a fair opportunity in life, no matter who or where they are. People who are furthest behind, who have the least opportunity and who are the most excluded will be prioritised. Every person counts and will be counted. Now, that phrase was written by the UK government in the foreword of their voluntary national review. And I took that to say, right, well, I'm going to use that as a lever. Every time you do something wrong, I'll say, but you said this. Did you mean it? No, no, really, did you mean it? And then they kind of, what can they say? It's there. We use the SDGs all the time to say, why are you doing that? Why are you doing this? Don't you know you signed up to the SDGs? So therefore, if you signed up to them, you can't be doing A, B, C, D and E because you're now breaking the promise you promised, you made. So despite the pledge, inequalities do exist within countries and between countries. So to meet the SDGs by 2030, it is vital that the UK advances inclusion, equality, human rights in all its activities, that it supports the removal of structural barriers, it fights stigma, discrimination, and that it champions a world where no one is left behind, and that they do this by leading by example, which is what they used to do. The UK did lead by example. There is no doubt about that. But if you're to think, what next? There are some barriers. I see, if you just put up the next slide, the first of these was COVID. And if you put up the slide after, the second of that is the Ukraine war. And if you put up the third one then, Brexit. Because in 2015 is when the SDGs came out. Very soon after that, Brexit consumed all of the oxygen in the House of Commons and the House of Lords. It was very, very busy. These were barriers to the achievement of the SDGs. But we were off course long before that, to be honest. So they can't be used as excuses, even though they have impeded the SDG progress. But really what should happen is that maybe we now think on how we need to work that little bit harder. We do have the tools to assist, and these come in the form of the Laudato Si Action Plan, leading on 7 Laudato Si goals. So I'm going to invite you just to listen to a special message from Father Josh from the Dicastery for promoting integral human development to all who will be presenting or attending at our National Justice and Peace Conference in Swanwick this weekend. So if you want to just show that little clip.
Hello. Best wishes and greetings from the Vatican Dicastery for promoting integral human development. So very happy to join your annual conference of the National Justice and Peace Network. I pray that your entire meeting may be a prayer that, as the Psalm 85 says, justice and peace may embrace. I congratulate you for having chosen a very appropriate theme for your conference: sustainability, survival or shutdown. You have really captured the critical moment in which we are living. The 2023 IPCC report said that right now, 1% of the planet's surface is unlivable. And if you don't act by 2060, 19% of the planet will be almost unlivable. It's frightening what we are walking into. And that's the reason we need to respond. And we have, both in the SDGs and Laudato Si, a great pathway. It's significant that both the SDGs were launched in 2015. Also, Laudato Si was written in 2015. So we have a pathway to respond. And we created the 7 Laudato Si goals as part of the Laudato Si Action Platform, embracing the 17 SDGs, that we respond to the cry of the earth, the cry of the poor. We work towards an ecological economics. At the micro level, we change our lifestyles. then the two pillars of education and spirituality, and the seventh one, we do all this together as a community, the Sindhal journey. So we have the pathways in SDGs and in Laudato Si, especially in the Laudato Si goals. I want to conclude inviting you to join the Laudato Si action platform so that we can realize the SDGs in the Laudato Si way, following the seven Laudato Si goals. May justice and peace embrace so that life for all, life of all, can flourish. Thank you very much, and God bless.
Thanks. I might just stop there for a second, just to see if anybody had a comment or a query or question. I can't promise to answer every question, but if people wanted just to, if they had a comment or anything they'd like to add or anything they'd like to say, you're more than welcome to say it, rather than waiting until the end when you think, oh, I forgot that, or there wasn't time, or... Thank you.
How come we've not cancelled the debt?
Yeah, good question.
Because each of these things in the developing world, they're still paying money to the British government.
Yeah.
You know, we're holding them enslaved. And so big things need to happen, not just little things. They've paid the debt. Time to move on.
Okay, we'll go on another little bit. Thank you for that, Mary. Father Josh speaks of a great pathway in the SDGs and Laudato Si, and I suppose really we're kind of trying to see, well, one has 17 goals, the other has 7 goals, but what's actually happening is that there is a one built on top of the other, strengthens each other, so they become that little bit stronger, shall we say, or the message is stronger, or the path is a little bit clearer, or the imperative is, becomes even more so. We are being told in Laudato Si to respond to the cry of the earth, respond to the cry of the earth, or the cry of the poor, to adopt a sustainable lifestyle. In 2015, Pope Francis published Laudato Si on care of our common home as a way of reiterating the Church's call for responsible stewardship of creation, calling all of us to ensure that our methods of production and consumption honour our Creator. And at the beginning of the document, Pope Francis states that his target audience isn't just Catholics or Christians, but everyone. I wish to address every living person on this planet. There is that universality again that applies in the SDGs. When it comes to problems and challenges facing humanity, the Church does not stand separate from the world. She exists in it and so shares in the concerns of the one human family. And that's who we are, one human family. There are some central themes which reinforce the SDGs. We must be neither exploiters of nature nor worshippers of it. Pope Francis explains, our job is to care for creation and act upon it in ways that give honour to our God. The problem is that the land now cries out to us because of the harm we have inflicted on her by our irresponsible use and abuse of goods which God has endowed her. So we've come to see ourselves as lords and masters, entitled to plunder at will. This is what Pope Francis tells us. Another theme is that we need to change the structures and change hearts. When faced with a problem, whether it's hunger, abortion, environmental degradation, the question is often, should we work to change the hearts of individuals or should we work to change the laws and structures of society? And the answer is yes. Yes to both. It will always be an answer to both. It would always involve both. Pope Francis tells us that we need a paradigm shift. We need an ecological conversion, a bold cultural revolution. Without such a conversion, we'll simply be treating the system and we might never get to have a look at the problem properly. We need to return to ethics and realism. The problem is that we still lack the culture needed to confront the crisis. I had to read that several times before I kind of figured we lack the culture needed to confront the crisis. What happens when it affects us, is it easy for us to make the change? And in doing so, we can safeguard the moral conditions for an authentic human ecology. The connection between social issues and environmental issues is very clear the way Pope Francis puts it. We are left in no doubt that there is an interconnectedness between a healthy environment and a healthy society, and the relationship between the care for creation and the care for the poor is one that is very, very obvious. He explains that the human environment and the natural environment deteriorate together. We can't adequately combat environmental degradation unless we attend to the causes related to human and social degradation. What about ourselves and our interconnectedness and our relationships? Our very existence is marked by four fundamental relationships: relationship with God, with each other, with all of creation, and with ourselves. As one of these relationships deteriorates, the rest will inevitably follow. But there is hope, because to the extent that we get one of these even a little bit better, then equally true, all of the others will follow. So what can be done? Lots of things have to change, of course. We know this. But it is we human beings, above all, who need to change. We lack an awareness of our common origin to some extent, our mutual belonging, and of a future to be shared with everyone. So what about the UK? And next, we have that of two strategies. We have the SDGs and the Laudato Si goals as we move further together. So if you put up the next slide. I mentioned that Measuring 2.0 has just been published, which is a shadow report on how well or not the UK are doing on their SDG promise. This is the second report, and again, they mention all the positives. They say we're doing well in education. And then they say in some parts of education. They say they're doing well when it comes to ending poverty, but then not all the targets agree with that. So there are ups and downs, but the Measuring Up To report is only a small snapshot in time. And what they've been asked to do is to try and convince the government to step up and do a proper recording or a proper measuring of exactly what it is they're doing with regards to the SDGs at home, knowing that they have made the promise. This report contains 120 recommendations, and many of them very, very easy. It contains a lot of case studies, which is new. So it is the voice of lived experience being obvious in terms of who is being affected and how they are being affected. This Measuring Up report calls on the government to embed the SDGs into all of their policies, in particular the Brexit strategy. But we must also think on the importance of an intergenerational response, the response that is there between older and younger and younger and older. Much of the good work forcing change is coming from the youth, who will perhaps suffer most if things don't change properly. But our experience, our age and our power in decision making calls on all of us to engage with the youth proactively and positively. So if you put up the next slide, please. This dashboard here is a simple explanation of how well or not the goals are being achieved. And you can see they have one in the middle, the green one there, number 9, is kind of, they say that's more or less achieved. It's an easy way of seeing, yes, we're doing okay, no, we're not doing okay. This is produced by the UN. It's a simple dashboard. They tell us that we're 11th out of 166 countries that have comparable data. And that sounds really good. But in actual fact, we should be further ahead because we have more. But we also have a responsibility to the other 30 countries who haven't got the data that we can actually compare properly with them. It's important to know that these SDGs can be citizen-led. And we now know, for example, that Justice Now demands, for example, a just economy, not SDG 8. SDG 8 is named decent work and economic growth. You can't have one with the other. Constant growth comes at the expense of environmental degradation, comes at the expense of people's well-being. It also comes at the expense of people will end up being poor, people will end up being upset. From the point of view of SDG 8, if we decouple economic growth from decent jobs and look to a more sustainable way of producing work, then perhaps things will be a little bit better. Justice Now means we must put the most marginalised at the centre, and advocating for an environment that is renewed, working for peace. It is about welcoming the stranger. Justice Now is about a politics that is characterised by kindness, by listening and by truthfulness. So what would we like? If you put up the next slide, we'll just have a little look at what it is we might actually like. We'd like an SDG unit at the Cabinet Office. We want it right at the heart of government. That's what we want. We want the government to finance the SDGs. Tell us how much it's going to cost in order to implement these SDGs. Restore overseas development aid to the extent that it was there. It has been reduced by a third. SDG-proof all policy and legislation. We want a futures commissioner like there is in Wales. A future generations commissioner is somebody who has been charged with the responsibility for looking out for those who haven't yet been born. Because all of this is about them. We're looking for a well-being budget, or a budget framed from the point of view of the person who is furthest behind. We're looking that the government will actually measure what matters. We want them to meet their international obligations, not duck away from them as they seem to be doing. We want them to commit to a second voluntary national review, and we'd love a chapter on youth in the voluntary national review. So these are just a few of the asks that we have. If I remind you at the beginning, Pope Francis said to us, what kind of world do we want to leave those who come after us, to the children who are now growing up? The answer we'd hope is a world without poverty, hunger and inequality. A world with global access to water and sanitation, education, clean energy, where people can live safely and fulfil their true human potential. A world where our environment is protected, where peace can flourish, and where we all work together towards a sustainable future. The SDGs, adopted by the UN in 2015, under the banner of the Agenda 2030, provide an important opportunity to realise this vision. They're a blueprint for development for the next 7 years, and they lay out a path of hope which we can all travel together. They offer a transformative agenda for all countries in which people and the environment are placed at the heart of development. While they're a template, they're not perfect, not by any means, but they are agreed. They are voluntary. Some say they don't go far enough. Progress can definitely be slow. Conflict makes things so much worse. Also, the word sustainable implies that we would check and limit ourselves from time to time, and we're not so good at this. We need to unleash the power of civil society, not close it down. When civil society complains that they're not at the table, we should perhaps take time to think and reflect on the concept of the table. The table doesn't belong to anyone. So therefore, we should not have to be invited to it. For effective partnership, civil society will have to work outside their comfort zone and encourage others to follow in a similar fashion. Two monologues don't make a dialogue. And so only sincere participation is to be valued. We should also buy into future commitments that are more mandatory and less voluntary if this mission is to be robust. We also have to deal with SDG 8, decent work and economic growth, which should be separated because of the obvious contradiction that is here. We aim to build a better world through positive, constructive language and examples. We encourage progress by inspiring each other and learning what's working. This in itself accelerates bringing that hopeful world into being. And as I think on what you can and should do this weekend, I'd offer the following. Jesus was not a pacifist, he was a peacemaker. And these are very, very different things. One implies inaction. The other is intentional engagement. It's not a betrayal of Jesus to be an activist. In fact, it's an embracing of his very heart. There is much to be outraged about these days. So as you attend workshops, let yourself be outraged. And let the outrage be the force that changes. It's not enough to simply have a burden. We must have a burden that moves us to respond, even at the risk of being offensive to those that response puts us in direct opposition to. When injustice takes place, one group is damaged while another is doing the damaging. And as Christians, we need to respond to both parties with equal vigour. And if you just put up the last slide, so I might even get you out of here early. So the message this weekend, for me anyway, is one of hope. We're reminded that inaction costs. We're urging the delivery of the SDGs at a pace that measures to mitigate the regressive effects of COVID and a cost of living crisis. The SDGs are about strategy, about collaboration, about awareness raising and interrupting. They're about facing up to problems and facing down the obstacles, there is no doubt that the SDGs are facing headwinds. In our support of the SDGs, we're moving away from the short-term thinking, the political cycle, the quick fix, the soundbite for the next election. We need to move more from the political cycle to the longer game. The biggest problems that face the United Kingdom are social, economical, technological and natural. Transformations that defy the quick fix, the single budget, the single political cycle. We need visionary and collaborative cathedral thinking, a collective mindset to plan and initiate and roll out the SDGs as a project for all. While we applaud the goals, it's imperative that they're translated into meaningful action. As Christians, we're led by the light of hope. We know, however, that hope only becomes reality when followed up with deeds. We are reminded by Pope Francis that injustice is not invincible, and our collective work in advancing the goals is a work of justice that can bring about change only if people like us make it happen. So my message to you this weekend is to reflect where you can, to be open, to meet new people, actively listen, ask questions, engage intentionally, be guided by the Spirit, and then head home with a mission or a message. And on Sunday, we'll ask you all to help us shape or articulate our commitments and our action for survival. So lastly, I'd just like to thank you all very much for the kindness in allowing me the privilege of sharing in your important conference this weekend. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much. So thank you very much for opening our weekend. And you talked about challenging us, disturbing us, motivating us. And we must look at things with a new heart and a new can-do attitude. And partnership means engagement, the peace, partnership, sustainable prosperity. That is a different thing to the economic model that we're always being fed about, never-ending economic growth, sustainable prosperity, and very importantly, prayer. And the fact that SDGs can't be achieved in isolation. And that Laudato Si is the moral charter for us to work towards the Sustainable Development Goals. And the excuses that are trotted out, as Brian mentioned, Ukraine, Brexit, and pointing out that we were lacking far behind before those things happened, so we can't use those sad situations as an excuse. And another word that was very important, relationship, that comes into every aspect of our life. And the Measuring Up report, we talk about positive and constructive language. That's key at the moment. We have such vitriolic language in all our political debates, and I always think, you know, the worst Punch and Judy show you see on any seaside front in a Prime Minister's Question Time, one batting against the other. It is appalling. So how we change the narrative and try to work for positive and constructive language, that is amazing. And the facing up and the facing down, and talking about a long-term vision, not a quick fix, is what makes the headlines, and so that our sustainable development goals must be transformed into action. And that's what hopefully Brian is going to lead us through, and the other speakers, Christine and John, tomorrow are going to, and the workshops as well, are going to lead us and transform us, and recognising that it is a long journey, but we have to travel in hope, we have to journey in hope. So we're very grateful to you, Brian, for coming over from Ireland, setting off at 4:30 this morning. That is absolutely phenomenal. So thank you very much, and we're really grateful to Brian for coming and joining us, and for all the work he put into the planning as well. So thank you.